Hey, Renter Tires, it's Adam Schrader here with another episode, joined as usual by Zach Lee Master, the founder and CEO of Renter Retirement. We are pleased to be joined today by Dean Rogers. He is a former NFL player turned successful real estate investor. Dean, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, so while you were doing your little, I'm assuming your real estate investing journey got done while you were dabbling in football on the side, but tell us a little bit about your first real estate deal and how you got how you got the bug.
Yeah, so this is great. So I love that you set it up that way, Adam, because the easy assumption is like, well, he played in the NFL, he made a bunch of money, naturally he just bought real estate, right? Well, my story, I wish, was that way. It wasn't. My story is had the childhood dream come true overnight. I'm playing in the NFL. I'm playing great. I've got Norv Turner, the head coach, telling me I'm going to have a long career. I'm like, this is crazy. Pinch me, you know? And all this opportunity, all the fame, the status, everything just right there in the palm of my hands. The only catch was I got moved from tight end, the position I played in college and had a lot of success with, to fullback. Because, of course, we had Antonio Gates, Hall of Famer, legend. And I got moved to fullback, and that was the position that they wanted me at. Although I was playing great, Adam and Zach, it just made it obvious and clear at that position, beating my head in, just head-on collisions over and over, that I was going to be an absolute vegetable and dead early if I kept playing that position. Even though I was playing great, and Norv Turner telling me, you're going to have a long career, keep doing what you're doing. I'm like, if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to be dead. So the short story is I walked away from the game and just started over from scratch. I mean, I had the big seven-figure contract, right? And I didn't leave with that money. I left early, right? So I didn't leave with all the money. So the reality was I got started working and realized that that was not going to get me back to the dream life. I started corporate, had this great job working in San Francisco. And amazing, incredible company. Like it was the launching pad for me, but I realized it was not the financial opportunity and the freedom I was seeking and I saw was possible with the NFL. So I'm like trying to figure out, what am I going to do? What's that next thing going to be? And I'm young. I'm 25. I don't have any perspective on life. I don't have any other skills besides crushing people on the football field and scoring touchdowns. So what else am I going to do? Well, I got to Google, and the first thing that came to my mind was, well, I like real estate. I remember watching HGTV shows. Maybe I'll be like a real estate agent, realtor, something, right? How to get started in real estate. I type it into the computer, and up pops a free podcast that says how to get started with little to no money. And I'm like, that's me. I have little to no money. And so I click on it, and sure enough, it tells me how I can get started with real estate with little to no money, finding deals, selling them to other investors, which is wholesaling. And this podcast set me on fire, got me so excited, and I just took relentless action listening to this free podcast, just audio, and ended up landing my first deal within 3 months that I made $6,000 on. And to me, that was all the belief that I needed to say, this is what's going to change my life and get me back to that dream lifestyle I saw was possible.
I got to admit, hearing seven-figure contracts and then $6,000 turned your corner and made you think this was going to be it. What gave you that belief that, you know, your $6,000 check that you got there was that you could replicate it? Like, was there something, was it just the process you were like, I can hone this and get it better, or what was it?
It was the belief and the proof of concept that I can do this over and over and over again, right? And hearing case studies of, you know, the pest control man and the plumber who did this and made, you know, $500,000 in a year and had all this freedom to travel with their family. And thinking to myself, gosh, I'm used to training for, you know, 4 to 6 hours a day and putting my body through, you know, all of this this training and like being prepared for war. If I just got to talk to some people and I can make some serious money, I could live that freedom lifestyle, right? And not have to put my body through all that.
What a perspective change, Dean. And thank you for sharing that with us. I think like that first deal, the way that I look at that is it's validation, right? Like you have this idea of, all right, this like stuff actually works. It's not all theoretical or this pipe dream. And just based on, you know, skill sets that you have and the ambition and work ethic, like, you know, like, hey, if I get this first deal, yeah, I can replicate this and build a business out of it. And I view that as the same thing with a lot of our investors as well, that are just people in our community that maybe haven't bought the first rental. You started with wholesaling. I actually did as well. That was a side hustle for me when I was an Air Force captain working as an optometrist. And that was just something that I got the real estate bug and I just did that on the side, but it was also validation. But the same thing would apply for people that are like, hey, that first rental property, like it just allows you to change your mindset, I think, around real estate. Now, wholesaling is an active job, really. It's a business. But I want to talk about the mindset change before we talk any more about like real estate specifically, because yeah, that's a big life decision. That is a childhood dream, as you mentioned. I think a lot of people would take the punishment all day long to try to pursue that as long as they can. And we know about professional athletes. I'm also interested to hear your perspective on this, because there are a lot of professional athletes that have a few good years, make a lot of money, and then, you know, you hear stories about them later and they don't maintain their money. They don't learn how to, they don't learn other skill sets, learn how to invest, things like that. But I want to hear about your like mindset shift of, okay, were you humbled having to, did you always hold on to that? Hey, I played in the NFL. Like, was that demotivating for you to take the next journey? Or were you just hungry? You're young and you're like, all right, what's the next thing for me? Talk to us about like what's going through your head transitioning from NFL to the next thing.
Yeah, as I've reflected on it, Zach, I've like had a lot of time to try to process and understand what my feelings were, what was my mindset during that time, what led me to the decision that I made. And I'll say it was an incredibly like exciting time, and it was also quickly an incredibly humbling time, as you said, and also kind of a low time. You know, I think a lot of athletes face depression and really struggle coming out of that, because you are such at a pinnacle of your life, especially for most athletes at an early age and end at an early age still, that to replicate that is near impossible, despite how much money you have, right? You see the fans of the game who are in the box office who have arguably, and in many cases, more money than the athletes on the field, but put the two next to each other, and who's being run up to, who's being asked to take pictures with, who is idolizing one versus the other. Usually, it's the athlete, and just that's culture and how people treat it. But to be in that position, to have all the status, to have all the fame, to have all the celebrity, to all the experiences that come along with that, and then walk away, you lose such a massive part of your identity. I was Dean Rogers, the football star, the athlete, and then I had to deal with the decision that I made, which was, I can just keep grinding it out and make this last as long as possible and have maintain the dream that's in my hand right now, or I can walk away with my health. And God, it was such a push and pull, but I knew, right? It was like, as I was rationalizing that decision, I knew that there was no alternative. There was only one choice, because if I kept going, I was going to literally kill myself. I mean, I'm not joking when I say this. Everything about me from the neck down, I felt indestructible. I felt like a machine. And that was my nickname, Dean the Machine. You know, like I felt like a machine that could destroy anything. I could run through a wall and felt invincible. But from the neck up, it's like when you crack an egg. You don't, the egg doesn't get better. It doesn't mend itself back. Like the egg's cracked, you know, it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. And so for me, I just knew in my heart that there was no alternative. I had to walk away.
And so you were forced into a city. You had to make a big choice, because that will come to an end. I think you realize that, right?
Yeah.
You chose your health or for an early end, but there's, regardless if that lasted 1, 2, 3 more years and whatever the outcome was, like there's an end to that. And you saw a point where you needed to maybe redefine yourself and choose a different path, which it sounds like with real estate, you maybe just stumbled upon it through an infomercial or whatever, but at least you made your first deal, I think you said within a couple months or something, and that was validation, all right, this works. All right, let's get back into the real estate journey. What happened after that? Why did you like real estate? Wholesaling is an active job. You and I are part of a real estate mastermind, and I do want to hear, because you coach people, I want to hear about like the importance of coaching, mentorship, and community and network, and how that has led to your success. But before we get there, let's talk about that next deal after that first wholesale and kind of your journey from there.
Yeah. So for me, my journey is riddled with, like most people who have, you know, made it and found success, with mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes early on. And so I've been doing this for a decade now, 10 years. And the first 5 years started with wholesaling in the first year. And then I jumped into flips, right? Naturally, a lot of people will, as part of their progression, think they need to get into flips. They can make more money, you know, this, that, and the other, right? It's glamorized on TV, so it must be easy and you must make a lot more money. Well, to spare you all the details, my initial first deals I jumped into, I made all of the rookie mistakes. I bought the house on the wrong side of the street, right? The comps are good over here and they're worth this much here, but on this side of the street, no, they're not worth as much. Hired the wrong contractor who stole money and did terrible work on the job. You know, did it in an area that I was unfamiliar with in another state and had no contacts, no like knowledge, local knowledge, anything, and ended up losing six figures in that second year. And I didn't have six figures to lose, right? And so now my back's up against the wall. And then I crawl back out of that by doing more deals. That was the only way to fix it, is, well, I have to make more money and get out of this hole. So once I got out of the hole by flipping houses and doing well at it, I then set myself back again. I got into another deal that ended up being like on an American Greed TV show. The guy was a wolf in sheep's clothing, got me into this deal and a dozen other people. And we all lost, you know, multiple six figures and just got wrecked, right? Set me back again. So for me, Zach, like my journey in the first 5 years was a roller coaster. And it comes back to your question of coaching, the importance of coaching and mentorship. I convinced myself at the very beginning of my journey, I didn't have the money or the resources to invest in myself. I had to go do it myself. I had to go do the work, right?
School of hard knocks, right?
The school of hard knocks, right? And the joke was on me. I convinced myself I couldn't afford the $10,000 coaching program that I knew that I would have joined, right? The person who had that free podcast that I got started on, I would have, no-brainer, joined his program, but I convinced myself I couldn't afford it. Instead, I rushed into some deals that ended up costing me more than 10 times the amount of money than if I would have just invested in myself. And the lesson I had there was I could have condensed my learning curve. I could have accelerated my results and avoided those mistakes. Now like I haunt myself with the what if. What if I would have joined the coaching program and I could have been infinitely more successful in a shorter period of time just by making that better decision,
you know? Oh man, let's unpack this a little bit. Well, first I want to say you were a fullback in the NFL and, you know, got constantly beat up. It sounds like you joined real estate and you were a fullback in your real estate journey where you hit a lot of brick walls and also
I
got beat up. So, but at least in the real estate journey, you continue, like that's a lifelong journey, right? And you can not go through a whole too many concussions with that. Just so
I finally figured it out and started making the right decisions. Yeah.
But coaching is like, that is such coaching and mentorship in general is such a key piece. And I think the struggle is that this is an area, especially in real estate and like financial coaching, that has just been there's so many gurus and coaches out there. It's like, how do you find the good one from the bad one? How do you determine?
Yeah.
And I do want to ask your opinion on that, Dean, but But also, I think a lot of people look at it as like, well, man, I'm not going to, like, this guy's course is $10,000. I don't want her, like, this coaching. I was like, I'm not going to pay that. I'm just going to go do it myself. And to me, it's like, you can certainly do that. But damn. Yeah, you're going to likely, I mean, the point of the coach and the program is to expedite your success, as you said, which ultimately allows you to be much more successful long term and maybe avoid some of those pitfalls up front that can cost you like 10-100x of what a coach may be able to assist you to avoid. And so I think that's the way you should look at coaching in my mind. I certainly paid for coaching early on. And I also paid for coaching programs that I thought were not so good. But you know what? At the end of the day, I took bits and pieces from each one of those that I applied to my investing that allowed us to be successful. So I'm just interested to, you know, I think a lot of people look at that on the front end. And also some of our colleagues, like I paid $400,000 and went to 8 years of professional school to get a degree that I might earn, you know, six figures on that I don't even use. And it's like, you know what I mean? So, I mean, you just got to think about that and like traditional education and all these things. But let me ask you this, Dean, before I ramble on too much. How do you determine who's the good people out there, the good coaches? Is it aligning with your goals? How would you recommend if someone's out there like, hey, I want to get into real estate. I need a mentor. How do I find the best one?
Yeah, I think the most important question to start with is when it comes to deciding which mentor that you're going to get guidance and advice and learn from is that they don't have to be the only one, right? This can be continuing education. So there is something to benefit and learn from someone, and you can continue to learn from that person, but it doesn't have to be the only one. And I think that's valuable because it is helpful to get different perspectives and help shape what works for you. Now, the other thing to that, Zach, that I would say is you need to look at their business and their lifestyle. Does it align with what you want? There might be the fast lane kind of investor who is, you know, traveling all the time, doing a lot of flashy stuff, and you know, doesn't have a family or different things like that. Or you might see somebody who has a lot of time who is traveling with their family. There's so many different flavors to that. And I think what's helpful is, if you want to have the results of a certain mentor, make sure that they are the results that you want, right? Because they are likely going to teach you what they're doing actively. And if they're getting those kind of results, then you want to make sure those align with what you want.
Yeah, I know Adam's got a ton of questions. I just want to say one more thing, Adam. That is so true, Dean, because when I look for coaching and mentorship, and this isn't just paid mentorship, like people I want to surround myself with, those are people in a position that I want to, like, I envy them, right? And I respect them. They have built a family life and, you know, that I want to emulate, or they're in a financial position or an investing position that I want to be in. They're in the health or, you know, even relationships. Yep. I always look at people to take guidance and advice from in a position that I want to be in. But real quick, on your point on having multiple coaches, how many coaches did you have as a professional NFL player? And my point is you have multiple, right?
Lots. Yeah, dozens.
So,
yeah. You have strength coach, a speed coach, you know, position coach, a head coach, special team coach. Like, the coaches go on and on and on. And to think that we're going to be successful and just do this on our own is a little bit crazy, actually. And the fact that didn't connect for me for a while was probably because of all the trauma I took hitting my head for a while. And once I finally, you know, cleared up my mind, I came around. So, yeah.
So you were, you know, you talked about how some of your early investments went south, you know, lost a lot of money. And then you went and met some people, talked with some people. At what point did you feel comfortable that you could go out and succeed in the areas where you hadn't done it before? Because, you know, you talked about your wholesaling successful. Flipping started off, sounded pretty rough, but now you've done a lot of flips. Yeah. So at what point in time did you say, hey, you know, I've gotten the coaching, I'm comfortable, and now I'm actually going to go apply it? Because a lot of people pay for stuff, learn it or learn some of it, and then never actually apply it to their life.
Yeah, great question. The frustrating part for me, Adam, was that the mistakes that I made that really set me back, I mean, they were pretty... there were a small amount of mistakes. Like there were only a couple mistakes, but they were such large mistakes, they really set me back. So that's what was so difficult and frustrating for me in that moment is like, all right, I'm doing a lot of good things. Like I got this deal, I got another deal, I'm making money, I'm putting money in my bank, but I made this one massive mistake and now all that money's gone and I owe money. Like I was not in positions to just write the check, right? And so it was incredibly frustrating. It was the best thing that I think I was prepared to take those moments on was just my background with sports, right? With football, like the only way that I got to the NFL was just being so consistent and disciplined to put in the work, right? Despite getting knocked down, despite having a bad practice, despite dropping a pass, despite getting knocked on my butt, you know, like whatever it was, you just kept getting back up and trying again and continuing to get better. So despite getting knocked down in my real estate journey, I always got back up. I always worked the next day. I always worked the late nights just to try to get back and you know, continue down my journey. So for me, the biggest lessons were just like, hey, it's better to do no deal than a bad deal. Like you don't need to rush into it and just blindly do these deals. And for me, I think those are just hard lessons I had to learn.
Yeah, deal for deal's sake isn't necessarily a good thing. So as you're doing this, talk a little bit about how, especially we haven't talked with many wholesalers about kind of how the pandemic changed or, you know, did it change your strategy in good or bad ways, or how did that impact your wholesaling aspect?
For us, it just reinforced that for us, our best way to run our business, to manage cash flow, to manage deal flow, and to keep a healthy business was to focus on what we did best, right? And what we do best is finding deals and negotiating deals. When we have deals in our hands and they're good deals, we can write whatever, you know, we can write our own outcome. We can wholesale the deal and make cash now. We can flip the deal or we can keep it as a rental. So the better we are at finding deals, the more exit strategies and opportunities we have. And so it just reinforced that. And during that whole pandemic and everything, we kept doing deals. And in fact, we empowered other people to have the courage and to have, you know, to have the right mindset to continue pushing on and forward in our market in Central California, to where we attracted a lot of people to bring deals to us. And I created and branded essentially a JV program and called it our Friends with Benefits program. I was like, hey, you know what? There's nothing better than making money with friends. Like that's the real kind of benefits we're looking for, right? So I named it our Friends with Benefits program, and we added $1 million of revenue to our business just by adding value to other people, helping other people through these deals. And it was incredibly fulfilling and rewarding. And it really is what led me to get into coaching myself, because I was helping so many people, whether they were just getting started, had done a few deals, or were experienced. Having that hands-on experience of really transforming and making an impact in their life, and then them seeking more support and guidance, is actually what ultimately led me into starting my coaching program and helping students, not only in my market, but nationally.
Yeah. So when it comes to your coaching experience, both as a student and as the coach, what are some of the common things you see that make people either succeed or fail as they go about their coaching or their, you know, coaching or learning journey?
Yeah, it's just the same reoccurring theme that I had with sports and I have in my own journey, is just people being disciplined. Because I think what ends up happening is people get excited. They put in a lot of effort and they might not get the results they were hoping for right away. And then they get discouraged, they get distracted, and they go look for the next shiny object that's going to solve that problem. And the shiny object that they just found is also the same thing. Doesn't quite solve the issue or the problem they're looking for as easy as they thought it was going to be. And now they're on to the next shiny object, or they give up. And for myself, no doubt, and for my students, the ones that have been the most successful are the ones that were consistently putting in the effort to get just better each and every day, continue to put in the effort and the work. And I think most people underestimate how much work they need to put in, or they are, not being honest with themselves about how much effort they're putting in or putting in the right effort, right? And I always say, like, when you're getting started, the focus that you need to have is on getting a deal. It's not on setting up your business card or your website or, building your contact list or, if only I had buyers for my deals, if only I had a property manager to manage my rental property. You need a deal first, right? You need to find deals. You need to know how to analyze deals and get in front of these opportunities. And so that's where the focus should be. And if you can focus on that and only that, then you can have those breakthrough moments that will lead it and make it a consistent thing.
We see people bounce around all the time with it. You mentioned the shiny object syndrome. That's something we consistently see. I mean, with our investors, just in general, with newer real estate investors, I think, Dean, where people are looking for like that quick success, and the results will come. As you stated, if you put in the effort over time, results will come eventually. But I think a lot of people look at coaching as like almost... almost as if they're going to hire a coach and they're going to do the work for them, or like that's going to like guarantee results. We encourage people when they're first getting started to choose something. I think it's more important that you choose something versus necessarily what you choose. You're investing, real estate investing is a lifelong journey and that will evolve over time. But you got to get into something, even if it's buy and hold property. The beautiful thing about real estate is there's a thousand different things you can do, right? You can jump into wholesaling and flipping, and that can be an active business. It can be a great way to build capital. Certainly an excellent way to learn how to find and, most importantly, evaluate deals. There's nothing wrong with just buying real estate and as well as holding them, but like do something. But I guess my last question on the coaching topic is, how do you define, like, what is the purpose of a coach? When someone's trying to decide, do I need a coach? Like, what are my expectations coming into this educational program or coaching? Like, what is the purpose of a coach, and how should they think about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. For me, in my opinion, what I try to do to serve, my students and what I tell them is like, you got to do the work, right? I'm not going to be able to do the work for you. I'm doing my own work. I have my own active business. That's what I'm here to do. You have to do the work. Where I add the most value is by helping you make those decisions and navigate through the implementation of creating your business, right? All the information is out there. What I teach isn't so unique, so different than everyone else. Like, there might be some things that are a little secret sauce, right? I do think I do some things really well and would be proud to say that. But the information is not original. Like, everybody is sharing out there in the world. And on YouTube, you can learn everything that I teach, everything that everybody teaches. But how do you stay focused and how do you implement? That's the purpose of a coach, is to show you the proven path of getting the results you're looking for. I know what's working for us and what's getting us deals consistently every single day, every single week, every single month, over and over and over again. So why would you try to do anything different if you're looking for similar results? And again, to reemphasize, the purpose of the coach is not to necessarily do the work for you, but to really help you as you have questions that come up. Because as you naturally are taking action, you have really simple, silly questions, as I call them. You have simple, silly questions that are just like almost too obvious, you're embarrassed to ask. But when you're watching it on YouTube, there is no feedback. It's a one-way conversation, right? You're just receiving the information. But if there was somebody, you could say, what does that word mean? How does that really work? Like, what button am I supposed to click here? What if they say this? What should I say? All of those little type of things if you can have a coach to walk you through it and alleviate that roadblock, that barrier that you feel is so big you can't move past, and make it easy for you to continue moving forward, that's what the coach should do, is help you continue to take those steps further and forward so that you can get the result you're looking for.
I'm assuming that with your students, it's similar to a situation that we experience with a lot of people we talk with, where there's usually one overarching theme that you see continuously with your students. What would you say is the first thing that you have to solve or deal with your clients that you think, you know what, if everybody would just come to me and understand this one small thing to start off with, we would get worlds, you know, worlds farther much faster?
Yeah. Again, I think it all comes down to marketing. Like if you're not making offers on properties, then you have no deals, right? How do you make offers? You need leads. So if you have no leads, then you have no offers and you have no deals. And it's just that simple. Like all of this business, whether you're buying a rental property, whether you're wholesaling, whether you're flipping, anything in the real estate space, it all is surrounded around that one asset, okay? Or it could be multiple assets. It's that physical property or properties, and unless you are making an offer on it, then you're not going to have any deals. So if we're spinning our wheels doing other stuff that isn't going to get us closer to making that offer, then, you know, we're kind of wasting our time at the beginning. When it comes to building a brand and building a business and hiring people and buying back your time and building a real business, that's the kind of stuff you should be doing after you've created some consistent deal flow and you've learned how to get deals yourself. But I think a lot of people spin their wheels trying to do the other things that don't really move the needle.
Dean, I want to talk about, kind of as we get close to closing here, what like your buy and hold portfolio looks like, because it sounds like you started wholesaling, you've done flipping. That's a very active business. It's a great way to build capital. We all know that wealth is created through holding on to those deals over time.
Yeah,
absolutely. Talk to us about how your strategy and philosophy of investing has changed and evolved over time, and what your buy and hold strategy looks like.
Yeah, so the light bulb went off for me about 5 years ago, right? As I was just coming out of making these mistakes, and I'm thinking to myself, gosh, I feel broke all the time, right? I'm flipping these houses. My cash is always in and then right back out. I just feel cash broke. What do I need to do to change this? And the light bulb went off first with, well, to put money in the bank and not have it run back out so fast, I need to start wholesaling. I need to put cash, need to create active income so that I can have money to do something with it and become like a real investor. Then the other light bulb went off, well, I'm making money, but I'm not keeping money. I have no wealth. Like I have no wealth, right? I did this so that I could have freedom. How can I have freedom without having any sort of passive income, without any sort of wealth? Like, what am I doing here? And so I realized I need to start buying rentals. So at the same time, I started wholesaling and buying rentals. And sure enough, my bank account started growing and I started to buy rentals. And my strategy for acquiring was not to use my own money that I was making. It was to use other people's money. And then I realized, well, if I get this deal good enough, I can actually have none of my own money in the deal, right? And at the time, I didn't know about the BRRRR strategy, but that's essentially what I was doing. So I was buying these houses with someone else's money, was fixing them up, remodeling them, putting a renter in it, refinancing it, and having basically no money in the deal, and in fact, getting cash back from it tax-free many times. And I was like, well, this is really cool. Like I literally just bought a free house. Like this person sold it to me. I bought it with someone else's money. None of my money was in this deal. This is a free house. And so I just was like, let's buy as many of these as we can. So about 5 years ago, I started doing that. And for about two years, started buying as many as possible. And right now have 63 properties that we own. They're all single family homes, some duplexes, some triplexes, a couple fourplexes, but most of them just your single family home. And for me, the past couple years, as the market was really shooting up, we were taking advantage of wholesaling and flipping the best deals. We weren't buying hardly any rentals, maybe a couple. So my refocus at the beginning of this year for tax reasons is I need many, many more rentals, and been re-energized and refocused to get several each and every single month.
The tax benefits and the depreciation, it's a wonderful thing. We don't have time to really get me on my...
You just said the magic word.
Yeah, my soapbox here.
Yeah.
But a lot of our investors, Dean, are like, you're very much an active investor. You are, you're someone who's, you know, you're making deals, you're finding deals, evaluating, you're putting your sweat equity into them, you're creating value. You know, a lot of our investors, I think, are more on the passive side. I certainly think we'll have some people that are interested to reach out to you and learn about ways they can be active. What would you say to the passive investors? Like, Dean, I love your story, and you're out there hustling, but man, I really like my job and I just want to own real estate over time. And do you think there's anything wrong with that strategy? How would you speak to that investor and encourage them to keep going?
If you got a W-2 job you love, you're making, you know, good income from, I'm telling you right now, like the retirement plan you think you have with your 401k just isn't going to cut it. Like there's nothing that is going to give you the benefits like owning real estate. Now, don't get me wrong. Are you going to get rich overnight by buying a rental property and just go crazy with cash flow of a couple $100 a month? No, it's not going to change your life overnight. But what it will change is the trajectory of your ability to retire, right? The benefits that you get tax-wise is second to none, right? All the tax codes were written for property owners. And the appreciation, the principal pay down, all of the benefits you get that will make that asset more valuable just by owning it over a long period of time, and the equity that grows just by owning it over a period of time, there'll be almost nothing else that will, you know, surpass that investment and return on investment. And the sooner you can do it, the more you can do it, the better you'll be.
Yeah, time is on your side in that regard, right? Like I look at some of the houses that we flipped and wholesale, and like that was great with like very successful one time, you know what I mean, on those deals. Yep. And we soon learn to take that capital and then put it into buy and hold real estate to let that compound over time. But that's, you know, the buy and hold real estate is what pays you residual time and time again and has actually the biggest payouts. It's just over time. So, all right, Dean, last question from me. I mean, we're recording this during, you know, playoffs, and I don't know if it's going to come out before the Super Bowl, but Super Bowl predictions for 2024.
Well, Adam and I were talking about that before. Me being a California guy, I'm going to put my money on the 49ers. So I'll make that bid right now, make the bet, and we'll see. We'll see. Yeah, it could be the Niners and the Ravens, like Adam was saying. They're both playing good. There could be some surprises. Tom Brady might come out of retirement and join a team. We don't know what's going to happen, right? But yeah, I think the Niners got a good shot. I like Christian McCaffrey.
All right. So the website is deanrogers.com. That's deanrogers.com. Dean, tell people what they're going to find when they go to that website.
Yeah, so when you guys pop over to deanrogers.com, you guys will see all my contact information. If you guys want to connect with social media, you know, Instagram and YouTube, all the good stuff there. And then if you guys are interested, right, I'm insanely passionate about wholesaling and how it sets you up to be able to cherry pick the best deals to flip or to buy as rentals. So naturally, if you guys are interested in that, you guys can check out all the information about my coaching program and learn about how to join the community there. So,
all right. Well, that website again, people, it's on the screen. If you're watching on YouTube, if you're listening, as a reminder, it is deanrogers.com. That's deanrogers.com. Dean, really appreciate you joining us today. Want to thank you for telling us about your journey and telling people, you know, mindset stories, because mindset is one of the most crucial things whenever it comes to being an investor. So, got to keep that upright. If y'all want to check out us and see what we have to offer, schedule a time to talk, look at our inventory, you can head over to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com. If you want to talk about mindset and getting ready to be an investor, you can also check out the Rent to Retirement Academy that is there on the website. And as always, don't forget, If you have any questions you want us to answer in future episodes, email them to podcast@renttoretirement.com. That's podcast@renttoretirement.com. Really appreciate the time you spent educating yourselves today. We'll talk to you on the next episode.